we tell them, you know, this is what being a programmer is. You know, this is what it looks like, and this is my story. And so these little girls are going home and they're getting really inspired by the women who facilitate the sessions, and they're saying, you know, mum, dad, I want to be a coder when I grow up, just like Ali or Lindsay or whoever is sort of running the workshop.
Meet Ali Watson, a computer science graduate and a developer who knows firsthand just what it's like to work in a male-dominated industry. She's really setting out to change the world.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsome.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed Podcast. Hey, it's a big week yet again. This week we are speaking with a good friend of ours, Ali Watson. Now, Ali heads up and co-founded the program called Code Like a Girl. That is a startup that has really taken Australia by storm because, well, you just have to think about it. You've got libraries and schools from all over the place having girls coming on in and learning how coding and programming truly works. And I tell you what, it's not just about how coding works. It's more importantly about how can they enter the industry and critically lead it. And Ali and the team are doing a fantastic job about that. In this chat, we get to speak with Ali and just find out just, you know, what makes her tick and why she set this thing up. And I wonder just how far this is going to go. Like, they're really doing so well. The only thing is that we had a bit of a problem with the audio. It was a little bit scratchy, a little bit of an issue because we did have a web conferencing platform that was struggling a little bit. So you'll hear a bit of scratchy voices here and there. But really, it's not about that. It comes down to what Ali has to say. And I tell you what, it's well worth the time. Let's listen on in to Ali from Code Like a Girl.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
Thank you, Ben, for having me.
No, totally, really happy to have you. And especially seeing that you're a person who's been nailing teaching kids how to code across the place. How on earth did you get into this?
Well, it really started as a passion project for me. So I have a degree in computer science, and I've been working as a web developer for the last 7 years, mostly working in creative agencies, small little businesses and agencies. And so very, very often I am the only girl on the team. I've even been like the only girl in offices I've worked in and whole companies. And so I realized that more needed to be done to engage girls and get them into technology. Like, I wanted to see that gender gap really narrow and get smaller, because currently there's just so little girls that are interested in the technology industry. So what started as really a side project and events where I was bringing women together to talk about technology, that sort of took off and gained really great momentum and popularity around Melbourne. And I realized like I could take this further and really make a difference with it, not just bringing girls together to network, but how about we bring, you know, an educational aspect to it. These girls were thirsty for knowledge and thirsty for the skills and technology after coming to events, after hearing from, you know, local role models in the technology industry. They wanted to learn the skills themselves. And so Code Like a Girl went from just a sort of casual meetup at night in Melbourne to then providing educational workshops for women and girls really of all ages now.
I love the fact you said it sort of took off. I don't know about the sort of is quite the right word here. I mean, how many events and classes are you now running?
Well, it's hard to say because it's sort of, we do run things a little bit ad hoc. I mean, you're right, sort of is probably an understatement. But something that I was super passionate about up front was I wanted to create a community. And you don't just create communities by doing one-off events or one-off workshops. Community is commitment, and you have to keep them active, and you have to offer services that is continuously bringing people together. So right from the get-go, even our events, I made a promise to myself to make sure that they were bi-monthly, every second month. And then with the workshops, the way we run them is a quite, you know, tech agnostic. So how we sort of create the workshops is we bring on volunteers, and our volunteers are usually developers just like myself who have been working in the industry who want to give back. And so what we do is we take their expertise and create sort of introductory workshops. So say you're a C-sharp developer, which is what I am. We would basically take your knowledge, digestible and easy to follow introduction class based on that. So the popularity and I guess the regularity of our workshops really is determined by how many volunteers we have on board, what's their availability and how willing are they sort of to give back to the community. And so what we're doing now is we're probably getting about 4 workshops a month. Really it's actually just so wonderful to be in a development community that just want to give back. But it's really dictated by them. And so we see that growing and growing as the months go on. And currently we're doing the workshops just in Melbourne. But we're looking to grow them nationally. So looking at Sydney next and potentially Adelaide.
And it's so fantastic that you're making it accessible. I mean, running it after school and whatnot. I mean, what sort of ages are coming to these events?
We offer ages from grades 1 all the way up to grades 12. And then we also do adult workshops, which is pretty much anyone from 16 and over. And what we're seeing is, you know, grades 1 to 6, they are so popular. Like, I don't know if it's the parents who are just want to get rid of their kids for a couple of hours, or if they're genuinely such an interest in technology from these young kids, but they sell out within, you know, probably a day of being online. Whereas what we're seeing is the older groups, maybe grades 7 to 12, they're usually a slower uptake. But no matter what age, what we're seeing is just they come to the workshops and they realise how fun coding really is. And I don't know if that's maybe our unique content or the way that we really deliver the content. I'm not sure. But I guess it's getting the girls exposure, because some of them are not even coding at school just yet. There are some schools that don't have the coding lessons in place yet. And so their first experience is that a Code Like a Girl workshop.
That's so cool. And the fact that they can do this bi-monthly as a minimum, I mean, I agree. Like, I mean, being able to run a program and then see you later and you never get to see the return, the educational return that you delivered them.
Yeah.
Now, being able to see them grow over time is so rewarding, without a doubt. I mean, so yeah, how long have you been running these?
So we've been running Code Like a Girl events for 2 years and the workshops for just over 12 months. So we introduced the workshops probably about 12 months into starting up the organization. We've got our format in place. So I guess I could tell you a little bit about what it's like to come to a Code Like a Girl workshop. And we start off the girls with some like fun offline activities, which you think coding, you think straight on the laptops. Well, not at a Code Like a Girl workshop. We tend to do really fun icebreakers. We basically draw like a big sort algorithm on the floor with chalk, and we get all the girls to be like numbers or letters or words. And so we teach them how computers sort, like using algorithms, and they have to physically be the sort of logistics of that algorithm. And then it gets them thinking already, right, how do computers think? But it also really breaks the ice, because these girls, some of them are really shy. You know, this is out of their comfort zone. This is something they've never done before. And so doing these sort of fun offline activities is a really great way to sort of settle the nerves and get them laughing and getting to become a really sociable environment straight away. The second thing we do is we tell our stories. So Code Like a Girl workshops are all facilitated by women who are in the industry. And the importance of that cannot go, I can't even just stress how important that aspect of a Code Like a Girl workshop is, because we tell them, you know, this is what being a programmer is. You know, this is what it looks like, and this is my story. And so these little girls are going home and they're getting really inspired by the women who facilitate the sessions, and they're saying, you know, mum, dad, I want to be a coder when I grow up, just like Ali or Lindsay or whoever is sort of running the workshop. And then the third thing we do is each one of our workshops, they're usually held at tech companies. So the tech industry and companies at the moment, they do anything to keep the best developers under their house. And so what they mean is like they have foosball tables, beer fridges stocked. Some of the coolest offices you've ever seen are usually tech companies. And when we run our workshops from these companies, the little girls are just like, I need to work here when I'm older. And so this combination of female empowerment, role modeling, the cool tech scene, we're really painting a picture for them to what their future could be. And those combination of things really engages them.
I was just thinking, listening to that, thinking there's real movement on people developing learning spaces in schools that actually entice kids to learn. Who would have thought? Like, why not? Let's make learning spaces kids actually want to learn in. That's an idea. But wouldn't it just be cool if the ICT room was developed in the same way? Let's be honest. There's always the funding side of things, but gee, throw a couple of beanbags in a foosball table.
Yeah.
It would at least break the ice somewhat.
Absolutely.
That's cool. And I was just thinking.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
my little girl, she's 8 years old, in year two, about to go to year three. And like, she does a very good job. You know, she's a good little kid, but she loves code.org. I mean, there's something about code.org just grabs her a real attention, because she gets to make these little games, you know, playing around with stuff. And it's really just logic-based stuff, and it's not over the top. But she says, I love coding. And this is a child who's, you know, like a lot of kids, who finds mathematics difficult. But code, she finds, is an absolute breeze. And I think it's really helping her beyond coding.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the gamification of these kind of platforms and how they're using fun sort of gaming techniques to grab the kids' interest is amazing. And we use code.org in some of our sort of very younger based workshops, and the kids just love them. They just get sucked in and you can't get them away from the laptop.
Absolutely. And I love what you're talking about with the sorting algorithm, with no computers, no laptops, no iPads, nothing. Just let's work on the floor with logic-based thinking. It's really good. I mean, it reminds me of a game we play with our students when we do Lego robotics, where it's just simply make me stand up, make me walk here and pick up an apple. And it's such a ridiculous thing. But the number of times I have to brace myself because I'm going to fall on the floor, it works. The kids just get their head around just how complex simple things might actually be to get, you know.
Yes, absolutely. And it's a great technique for breaking things down. Like, programming in its essence is just problem solving. And even, you know, whether it's a small problem or a big problem, the way you tackle that in terms of programming it is you break it down into little bits of pieces. And so it gets them to understand how a program is made. Even if it's very, very high level, it is still getting into that sequential way of thinking. And that's so crucial to that first step of learning to code. So it's really great.
So, I mean, this might put you on the spot a little bit, but I just kind of wonder, these little mini incubators you're basically running, you'd have kids working on their own projects, and they'd all be all sorts of levels. What are the sort of things that you've seen kids working on as their own projects?
Probably one of my favorite ones I'll tell you about. So we did this HTML and CSS class, and we did it for ages 7 through to 11. And everyone's always really shocked, like, when they hear a 7-year-old learning HTML and CSS. But I always say, you know, these kids are capable of so much at a very young age that it's just because as adults it intimidates us doesn't mean it intimidates them. Yeah. And we had this 7-year-old, and she created her own web page, and it was the most, I mean, we were all in fits of laughter. She made this little web page, and the background was made up of a GIF of a dog eating pizza. And so this was repeated on the background, and then the whole page was like, had she embedded like YouTube videos and images of just lots and lots of like cute dogs. So obviously she was a dog fan. But there was just something like about it that I just thought, this is so cool. And like, I honestly wanted to show the world it. And we had other girls, Harry Potter fans, and so what they had done is created these, like, oh, I can't remember the name, it was like Potterland type fan websites. And it's just so amazing to watch them like take what they're passionate about and create something online about it. And that's how it starts, like just following what you're passionate about and finding a project that you can apply your passion to. Because I think that's the problem with coding and some of the education systems, is it doesn't have like context to yourself. Like, you don't have a personal relationship with it, or you can't find a way to relate to it. When I learned programming, it felt like the things I was learning was so out of context. They didn't have like a real life application, or it was hard to figure out how to get excited about it. And so when you give the girls the tools and leave them to their own creativity to just bring ideas to life, I think that's when you see them light up. That's when you see them get engaged and get really into it, is when you give them that empowerment and freedom to do what they want with the tools that you give them. And so, yeah, that was probably the funniest thing I've seen one of the girls make.
That's really, really cool. I mean, and I totally agree what you're saying with making it have context. I mean, I vaguely recall, and this pretty much shows my age, but I do remember being shown some programming language back in the early 90s and as a kid in high school. And it was really, they were just, Fortran or whatever it was. It was just this, just here's some boxes, here's some very, I don't know, heavy text and number states. I was looking at going, look, please, I might as well learn another language. And I suppose I was learning another language, but it wasn't presented to me that way. It was just, here are some boxes, here are some random words and numbers in those boxes, here are some arrows flowing as a flow chart, and please memorize it because the test is on Friday. It told me nothing. But I learned the test. I mean, apparently I did well on the test, but I didn't know what I was actually writing. I just knew what to answer on the test. It's crazy.
Yeah. Right. And I think when you compare, like it's just almost incompatible, like what we probably went through. Like even when I first studied computer science, that was, oh God, years ago, I don't know, 7 years ago, I got my degree. So things have changed so much. Like when you look at some of the most successful companies of right now, we're thinking Facebook, Uber, Google, and all of those companies, you know, they were just lines of code one day that someone wrote in their basement. And that alone, I think, has shifted this new era of entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
That is the potential future. Like it's just another tool to really make your ideas, you know, successful. And I think like kids nowadays must just be really inspired with those stories.
With kids attending your class, and I actually wonder also too, the parents themselves dropping the kids off, I wonder how many of these kids want to be the Zuckerbergs of the future or whatnot, or are they just there for the fun of it? I wonder what's going through their head as to what's their end game of this. I mean, surely as young kids, they don't really care. They just want to play with it a little bit. But I wonder about the high schoolers, about what they think is the point of learning coding. Have you asked them that?
Yeah, that's it. Well, funny you say that. I was actually at school in Tasmania last week. So we went down, me and a few friends who are part of a big campaign called Choose Maths, and we're really trying to drive more girls into choosing maths and further education. And so we went down, and there was four of us. I was a programmer, one of the other girls was a data scientist, the other worked for Boeing, and it was all these amazing engineering technology careers. And we went round and we sort of, I think it was six different schools, and all the girls were brought to sort of meet us for the day, and we did a panel, and yeah, it was great. And so we all told our story and told them what it was like to be us, like living in a day in the life of a coder or day in the life of an engineer. And so these girls, at the end of it, you know, you're never sure the impact you have, but once we all finished, it came to the panel, and I thought, I'm going to ask the crowd, like I'm going to ask these girls what an impact that had in them. Did it change their mind? Did they already know this information, or, you know, are they all still just set for the same path they were before they walked in the door? And I said, who in this room changed their mind today after hearing what we all had to say? Who has like changed what they decided to do? And almost every single one of them raised their hand. And it was the first time that I've felt like the impact of what we've said really mattered. Like it really changed. And I think there's such a disconnect between the education system and the industry, because the industry moves so fast now. There's jobs that weren't around, you know, 5 years ago, 2 years ago, even 1 year ago that are today. And it's so hard for them to be, you know, accurate and up to date with this information, and also get people in these jobs to come and speak to the girls. But I was kind of mind blown that some of the women in the room, some of the girls, the high school girls in the room, had no idea that these careers existed. Now that they know, now that they heard our stories, are really considered in terms of their future education. So yeah, I think it's just such a privilege to be able to do that through this organization and through other organizations like the Choose Maths campaign. So
I totally agree.
It is definitely worthwhile.
Yeah, it definitely is worthwhile. I mean, I was thinking about even just our listenership. Like, I mean, hi to all the listeners there. I know that we have teachers listening. We have education supervisors, directors of curriculum. We've got people who work in museums and all sorts of people. The listenership is broad and diverse. And undoubtedly, there'll be some people in positions where they can actually look at their own curriculum. And I kind of wonder if you had the chance, just say you could be able to wave said magic wand and everything just worked perfectly. I mean, we know how that works, right? Every day, right? Right, teacher, you know how that is. But anyway, what advice could you give, especially to someone who actually has the power to change curriculum, to what advice could you at least give them to be able to help them look at how curriculum meshes with, especially the tech industry, seeing it move so fast and considering how slow curriculum change actually can be? It's difficult. What is there any advice you give me? That's a tough question.
Yeah, it's very difficult and there's never a solution. Mm. That's all right. Yeah. Like I've been here, so I come from the UK and we had coding mandatory from 2014 in our primary schools. And what the UK are seeing now is, so I used to always be like, right, we need coding in schools from very early age. That was my big message. But the thing is, teachers just don't have the skill sets. I mean, hopefully their education, I mean, hopefully degrees now, teaching degrees will introduce it. Hopefully they'll do modules in coding. But what the UK are suffering from at the moment is they took all their teachers and taught them how to code. And what they started seeing is the teachers started leaving the education system to get coding jobs because they were better paid, better work sort of life balance. And that is no good. Like, I guess solutions would be to better pay teachers, give teachers the right resources and skill them in the areas of technology. But I would also love to see a cross collaboration. The industry isn't just, you know, the IT industry or the tech industry. It is a cross collaboration of different disciplines. Like, you don't just, you know, for me, for instance, I've always worked in creative agencies. I love working on projects that are, you know, short-term projects on websites or mobile apps that are sort of campaign-driven and very strongly creative and design focused. And that's one sector. You know, how about you create a creative coding class, you know, at high school where girls who are interested in art can bring their code, like art to life with code, or there's ways that you can use tech and art. And you could pretty much do that with every discipline where you bring in tech subtly and teach coding subtly through other subjects. So that would be something that I would love to see happen. How you'd go about doing that is another story. But if I could just dream it up tomorrow, that's what I would like to see.
The good news is there are thousands upon thousands of schools across Australia alone, let alone around the planet. I would love, wouldn't there be just a cool impact of this particular podcast that someone reaches out to you and go, you know what, I'm ready to have a go. Ali, hey, let's play with one class and see what happens.
Let's do it.
That just been, there you go. A challenge for someone. I'd love to someone reach out to Ali. We'll give Ali's details out at the end of this course. But wouldn't that just be neat? That a genuine impact of people who have chances.
That'd be
cool. Yeah, that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, I'd be very interested in helping that one.
Oh, yeah, I bet. And that's the problem with having two people who constantly live in the future talking together on a podcast. dear idea, but that would be sort of fun. So flipping it the other way, so say you had a, I don't know, let's just say a 13-year-old girl and she knows she loves code. She's been doing coding for a while at home. Her teacher's been very supportive with it and all the rest. And she knows that she wants to enter, I don't know, IT in some way, shape or form. Let's just say it was an engineering, whatever, that at least gives a sort of direction. What sort of advice would you give to this young girl who's about to go through a formal high school to prepare herself for entering the industry that is IT? What would be the advice that you give?
Well, I'd say that she's definitely on the right footsteps. When I compare what it was like for me starting computer science, I had no knowledge of programming to begin with. And that was quite a learning curve. So she's definitely on the right foot. But this would be stay in touch with the industry. Sometimes I think it's quite a large leap going from education to university and then on to the industry because they're quite still become quite disconnected. So my advice would be to continuously try and get internships, even when you're starting out. The industry is shifting. The industry used to expect, you know, ready-made coders out of uni, but now they're realizing that they have to play a bigger part in this education and upskilling. So a lot of companies are doing apprenticeships, and a lot of companies are doing sort of 12-month internships that go into full-time jobs. Companies like Myob and Vato, they're just a few of the Australian ones that I know are really taking a big step in terms of taking on responsibility of upskilling. So I would say connect with these companies. There's so many amazing tech companies in Australia, that absolute giants doing great things. Canva, Campaign Monitor, you've got Google over here. So many that you could engage with even from a young age to be involved either in their events and either in work experience. And so my advice would just be getting straight away, because that gives you, it really opens your mind into the networks that are available. And I think also just going along to events. So like I was saying before, the tech industry moves so quick and there's always a new product, new technology, new language, new platform that you should be checking out, that everybody's onto. And so it is impossible to stay up to date with what's happening. So my advice is go along to tech meetups, go along to tech events. That way you surround yourself and you create a peer network. And that not only gives you sort of that motivation and that socialization that you kind of need that helps in your learning, but it also keeps you updated with what's happening without having to sort of make much effort or do too much research yourself. By having these strong networks and going along to these events, you can stay on, like, you can stay up to date and really be involved with what's happening in the community. Because what's beautiful about the tech industry is the community side of things. There's so many people out there who just love sharing their knowledge and talking and presenting. And, you know, I've always wanted to do this, like a personal challenge of mine, that I would love to go a whole month, and I bet I could do it. There's normally a technology event every single night in Melbourne, whether it's on JavaScript or, you know, CMSs or artificial intelligence. There's always a meetup on technology. And so you could probably go every day in a month, go along, grab a beer, get some pizza, all for free, and get all that information. Imagine what you could learn in a month by just going along to these meetups at night. And so, yeah, my advice is just get involved, because it's such a welcoming and great community to be part of.
Oh gosh, and if you're a uni student too, free beer, free pizza, you don't have to worry about your dinner each night. No,
yeah,
and you get to learn as well. That'll win.
Absolutely.
And for the kids under 18, I'm sure there'll be soft drink and soda and water and all things correct for younger people too. But I love that there is this real, it's not even grassroots anymore. This is outright main stage. This is what's going on in serious companies, and for good reason. I mean, they need the talent to be able to drive these engines that are these huge businesses, and it's got to come from somewhere. And why not the students that are only around the corner? That's awesome. Cool. So there'll be people, speaking of the community and everything else, there'll be people who would love to get in touch with you, I guarantee it. And look, please, I challenge you, someone who would love to have their school involved in a bit of a a bit of an incubator yourself to try some different things. How would we get in touch with you, Ali?
So you can reach me through the website. So we're on codelikeagirl.org. You can also reach out to us on Twitter. We're at codelikeagirl.au. And yeah, you can, if you get in touch with us through those means, there's a contact page with a contact form. And then we also, you can give us the tweet, or even on Facebook. We're on Facebook too, and Instagram. So yeah, you'll find us.
Absolutely. And actually, if your students have created a cool little web page or a cool little app that's publicly accessible, why not send Ali that link to that? I'm sure they'd love to check it out. Would be
absolutely
cool.
We would love that.
Look, thank you very much. Look, thank you very much for Ali for coming through. And thanks for the people listening into. I know we've had a bit of fun with the audio, just slightly cutting out here and there. I know that Ali is caught in a bit of a concrete bunker where she is. So I suppose in this true IT context, maybe in the basement with a hoodie on and working hard with pizza next to her or something like that. But we get there. But look, much appreciate, Ali. I've had a ball having a chat with you, and no doubt we might even catch up with one of these upcoming meetings. You might be up in Sydney soon, and we get to see what you're doing with Code Like a Girl very soon up here too.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a meetup coming up in November in Sydney. So I think details go on the website early October, so check that out.
Awesome. And we'll put all those links in the show notes up as well. And this will go out just about in time to let people know about that too, which is fantastic timing. So look, if you can get along, please do. It'll be very, very cool.
Thanks, Ben. Speak to you soon. Bye.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech, and more. To see 100 fun, free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S. And click 100 free experiments.
How great is Ali from Code Like a Girl? She's been doing a fantastic job, really inspiring kids right across Australia to get involved in computer science. And considering that she only got going, you know, a bit earlier than last year, but only just, this is a great story, and they really are. They're in multiple cities around the place, and I've got this funny suspicion they're going to go further than that. Well done, Ali and the team. You really are rocking it. Hey, what are my learnings out of this? Number one for me was just get involved. If anyone listening to this knows a child that could be getting involved in computer science, now's the time. Look up Code Like a Girl, and there are certainly areas in libraries and schools and all sorts of things where they can come into it, you know, a fun environment and learn from others about, you know, how to solve problems in the computer world. And more importantly, hey, it's a cool club to be in, to actually, you know, hang around with your peers and, you know, kick around the place. I reckon you'd have a great time. Hey, number two for me was, it's the story that matters. It's not so much moving integers around and parentheses and all the stuff that you need to do in code. It's why you're doing it. What are you trying to actually solve? And when you start thinking about that, that's really how we should be thinking when we're teaching our kids, is not so much the topic or the content itself, is why are we doing it and what's the relevance? And that's certainly what Ali and the team are definitely doing. Number three for me is that, well, coding is a fact of life. Coding and problem solving and all that sort of programming logic is embedded in many of our facets of our lives. And so even if you don't find yourself as a computer programmer, just understanding how these things work is probably a good idea, because they can become more and more involved with our life. Everything from iRobot vacuum cleaners to autonomous cars, they are going to be all over the place. And I think the idea of understanding what they can do and what their limitations are will really put us in great stead.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Love your science? We do too. Here's this episode's education tip of the week. Grab your pencil and get ready to make some notes.
This week, I'd really like to look at the idea that you could actually teach about how robotics actually work, even if you don't have robots or computers. Really, you actually can. I mean, people often think that the average robot is very intelligent, and they expect that robots can, well, think for themselves with very little input from humans. And, you know, that's often from after watching movies and cartoons and whatever else. I mean, who could blame them? So a great way to show the difficulties in programming robots can be by asking students to, well, give you commands as if you're a robot in the room, as if you were the thing made out of metal and plastic and rubber and whatever else that makes the robot. Look, the trick of this lesson is to be incredibly pedantic. Insist on requiring every tiniest bit of information that will allow you as the robot to achieve whatever the goal might be. And you'd be amazed how much the students will find this highly amusing. They'll find it a little bit frustrating, but at the same time, they'll find it incredibly engaging as they try to grapple with this problem. How can they get you to move you to a place to pick something up? Seriously, put an apple, put some grapes, put something, I must say, I like doing the grapes thing. Put some grapes on a table somewhere and ask the kids to get you to walk across the room and pick up the grapes. It seems simple, right? But when you think about it, think of all the joints, your ankles, your knees, and how you got to move your legs to actually move. It's actually more difficult to describe than you think. And you just imagine it. You're standing in front of the kids and they say, right, walk towards a table. And you look at it and just go, does not compute. How do I move my legs? In a robotic voice, like, you know, you might as well ham it up. At this point, the kids will look puzzled, but they'll start thinking about, well, maybe you've got to teach them they've got to teach you how to move yourself. So they'll tell you to raise your leg. So you go, does not compute. Which leg do I raise? Et cetera, et cetera. When they finally tell you to do your left or your right leg, lift your leg up from your hip, keeping a nice straight leg right outwards, the kids will look at you funny and they'll realize they have to get you to bend your knee and so on and so forth. And by the time they get you to the table, it's probably taken ages. Now they'll tell you to pick up the grapes. And because they'll undoubtedly not tell you how much pressure to use your hand, you then crush the grapes in your hand. The mess goes everywhere. The kids go, ah, because they've been trying to get you to, you know, do the task. And then they suddenly realize that all these things need to be put in place for a robot to do this task that you seemingly find quite easy. And that is inherently what this is actually about, showing kids that, you know what, in robotics, you have to think about all sorts of parameters and bits and pieces. And hopefully, maybe you can be setting up a situation where the robot itself can start learning from its own environment, because that's actually where intelligence is.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled F-I-Z-Z-I-C-S.
When it comes down to it, what Ali Watson and the team at Code Like a Girl are really doing are teaching kids to think in a way that's logical. It's all about computational reasoning. It's computational thinking done in a fun way. And Neil Bramson in last week's episode certainly had a bit to think about that too.
That logical thinking process and being able to apply that to a range of learning areas and a range of opportunities is what it's about. And coding is one way of getting there without doubt, and it is a good way with the likes of Lego and Spheros and Ozobots and what have you. I don't think it really matters which toy you use. It's what you get at the end. So that computational thinking is a biggie for us.
Yes, it's definitely worth checking out last week's episode, because Neil Bramson is also the recent winner of the 2017 Prime Minister's Prize for Excellence in Science Teaching in Primary School. So he seriously knows what he's talking about when it comes to teaching STEM to young kids. So definitely go check that out.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Sign up now for our fortnightly email newsletter. It's loaded with details on new experiments you can do, STEM teaching articles, new gadgets, exclusive offers, and upcoming events. Go to physicseducation.com.au. Scroll to the bottom and add your email.
And that just brings us to the end of yet another Physics Ed podcast. Hey, I hope you had a lot of fun with this. We've got more coming up, though. Next week, we're speaking with Danielle Lego from the education team at Sydney Olympic Park Authority. Quite interesting. We've got to speak in amongst the mangroves at the Education Centre in Sydney Olympic Park, and hearing about what they've been doing about teaching kids about the environment was certainly well worth the time. But until then, I hope that your museum, your zoo, your aquarium, your school, your library, wherever it is that you're hanging out and working with learners, I hope you're making it as engaging, as fun as possible, and hoping there's a bit of deeper meaning to what you're actually doing for the kids so they can understand how their world works. You've been listening to me, Ben Newsom from Physics Education, and this is the Physics Ed Podcast. I might catch you next week. All the best.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book, and more, go to physicseducation.com.au.